You know, a penny saved really is a penny earned. And Jim Gray of Optimized Media Group, OMG, is here to tell us about how he helps his clients save a ton of money, getting great return on investment in addition to doing more normal engineering tasks for them. We're going to hear all about that coming up. Jim Gray joins Chris Tobin and me on This Week in Radio Tech. TWiRT is brought to you by Direct Current Broadcast e-newsletter. Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday with technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. By BSW Broadcast Supply Worldwide, where March is microphone mania. It's almost over. Low mic bundle prices that cannot be repeated. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. It's episode 342 of the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and everything in between. And, if we got a show today, it's about making money by saving money. And a few other topics are in there as well. I'll introduce our guest in just a minute. First of all, I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance, and I do this podcast. And I'm just delighted to bring you as much information as we can about engineering and other aspects of radio broadcasting. We've had 341 shows before this one. Most of them really good. And we've got more shows coming up. In fact, around NAB time, Chris and I will be broadcasting live from NAB. So we'll have a big broadcast extravaganza coming up there. Speaking of Chris Tobin, let's bring him in from a rooftop overlooking somewhere in Newark, New Jersey. It's Chris Tobin.
Well, hello there. Yes, I'm just having a good time, and it's overcast skies, and thought I could do an outdoor event, and I'm using my little Wi-Fi link, so it's really good. I'm having a good time. Why not?
You want to for newer listeners, you want to remind them about your Wi-Fi link, what that is?
Oh, this one is a Ubiquiti Bullet, the M5. It's extending a LAN, so it's a little collinear antenna, a little rod, like a shower rod type thing, about 2 feet long. And it's at the other end of the roof, and I'm over here with my laptop with just a standard Wi-Fi switch turned on, and got myself a dedicated link. It's about 20 megabits up and down, so it's very nice. My own little link. Yeah.
There's some interesting waviness to the picture, kind of vibration reduction or something. But other than that, the picture's really clear.
Yeah. I'm near a vent that just turned on, and air intake. I'm feeling it on my feet. I'm like, wait a minute, what the heck? But the connection is very good. It's outdoors. The light is just right. It's diffused lighting. I don't have direct sunlight, so it's perfect.
Yeah, it looks really good. It's good on the face. It's very complimentary to facial features.
Good.
And for those of you who haven't seen Chris too much, Chris is the master of doing the remote broadcast from darn near anywhere, right?
We've had some interesting locales. Yeah. I will admit that.
You know, if there isn't internet somewhere, Chris will make it.
Well, I'll extend it. I won't make the internet, but I'll extend I'll extend its features, its benefits. That's what I'll use, but I don't create it. So that would be interesting. Creating internet.
I hear that. That's right. Al Gore did that a few years ago, and we've been great ever since.
Look where it got him.
That's right. Hey, speaking of extending, let's extend a welcome to our guest, Jim Gray at St. Cloud State University. Jim Gray, welcome in. How are you?
Doing well, Kirk, and thanks for inviting me to my first official appearance on TWiRT. Long time viewer, first time guest.
Thank you. And you and I got to chat at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Clinic back in October. We did a quickie interview. We put that up on some of Telos's social media. We got a commercial break coming up, but just tell us who you are and maybe a little hint of what we're going to talk about.
Sure thing. I wear many hats. I am the director of operations for the broadcast facility here at St. Cloud State University, where we operate one full power FM, four HDs, and two LPFM stations, plus TV stations and things like that. And I'm also the managing partner for Optimized Media Group, a group of engineers that were kind of working independently and realized that if we worked together and shared our knowledge and shared our expertise, that we could probably service our client base a whole lot better. And we kind of specialize in finding ways of making the operation of radio more affordable.
I'm glad to have you on because we got to talk last year in October at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Clinic, and you had some amazing stories. And I thought, I got to have this guy on the show. More people need to be exposed to Jim Gray's ideas about how to make money by saving money in their broadcast operations. So we're going to hear about that.
Yes, we are. Hear about that and kind of how I come to that that conclusion, and maybe, I don't know, some good war stories.
All right, good, good. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by the folks at the Telos Alliance, and they put out this newsletter. Comes out, it's called Direct Current, and it comes out every Thursday. Sometimes we run a video ad about it, but this week I want to tell you about this week's Direct Current. If you're not signed up for it, by golly, you need to do so. Go to telosalliance.com/directcurrent. You engineers, you know what direct current is, no problem. And the story this week, the top story is IP network security in the IoT, that's Internet of Things, age. Well, if you're worried about security on your IP network, and if you're not, you need to wake up, because you do need to, if you know what you're doing, you probably don't have to worry so much. But if you're not worried, you may need to take a clue, because the Internet of Things is here, and there are all kinds of devices out there that may not be written with software and security with security in mind. So a number of different engineers and experts have contributed to some articles. There's a new article put out by Radio World. In fact, it's an ebook by Radio World about how to secure your networks. The IT department, if you work with an IT department, they'll have some ideas about this, but IT doesn't always understand the needs of broadcast and vice versa. Hey, there are things that we broadcast engineers do that might give the IT department fits. So a conversation is always good. You've got to come to some agreement. And if you're the IT guy and the engineer guy, like a lot of us are, well, then you really kind of need to know both ends of this. In fact, during our show, we'll get more into this, but you can get a great leg up on information by reading this article that is linked here in Direct Current. Our chief technical officer at Telos, Greg Shea, gives an overview on keeping your broadcast network safe. Also, if you scroll down a bit, here's a story that is really cool. The Cleveland Technology Awards, the Telos Alliance was recognized for its expertise in the world of technology. And CEO Frank Foti accepted the honor at a recent luncheon. There's a slideshow there, and you'll see a lot of the folks at the Telos Alliance responsible for research, development, developing products. Really cool, and delighted to be part of that. Hey, are you going to NAB? And even if you're not, well, you need to know that the Telos Alliance, various researchers, professionals, designers from the Telos Alliance, and even me, we're giving presentations and papers at the NAB. Some of these sessions are really amazing and interesting. My colleague Hans von Zutphen is going to be talking about FM modulation using that modulation in ways that add loudness without adding any processing. And so Hans and I have been working together on a paper for some time, and that's going to be delivered. Joe Talbot and I are also doing a paper about, breaking down the barriers of doing live remote broadcasts from really interesting places and how to use IP connections to make all that happen. We've got, true stories from real broadcasters on how to make all that go on. And there's a story from Linear Acoustic with their AMS authoring and monitoring system. That is really cool, getting audio exactly right for the ATSC 3.0 digital TV system. Plus, upcoming events are always a part of the newsletter down at the bottom. You can see what's coming up. Keep yourself abreast of that. Like, for example, are you in Oklahoma? Well, the Oklahoma Broadcasters Conference actually started today. It goes on tomorrow as well in Oklahoma City. Plus, a spotlight item at the bottom. There's a new product that we're introducing at NAB. It's the TVC-15. And it's not exactly a television product. You need to check that out. So the Direct Current newsletter, let me implore you to subscribe to that, because it's very good. Go to telosalliance.com/directcurrent. Put in your name and email, and you'll be signed up for it. It's just once a week. And, hey, if you don't like it, you can unsubscribe. There's a link on every one of them. You know, it won't spam you with that. But it's good stuff. Thanks a lot to the Telos Alliance for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and to my colleagues for producing every week Direct Current. All right, we're back. Chris Tobin is along with us, and Jim Gray is here too. Jim, you're a professor at St. Cloud State University, and you do some engineering as well. But give us the little elevator talk on what you do at St. Cloud State.
Well, I'm the director of operations for our broadcast facility here at St. Cloud State University. We have one FM, four HD stations, and two LPFM stations that work out of the radio side, plus TV stations as well. And I oversee the technical operation of the facility here, and I'm also a professor within the department, so I teach a couple of classes in everything from broadcast news writing to some audio production classes and a few other things here and there. So that's a good portion of my day in the or week, at least. The rest of the time, though, I'm also the managing partner for Optimize Media Group. We're a group of engineers that have been working with working independently, helping other stations, kind of, you know, with the little side gigs here and there. And then all of a sudden, now what we're doing is working together and helping our clients, because we realize we each have separate expertise. So it's a group of separate experts that work together to help folks in the radio industry. And our personal kind of mantra to this is finding ways of saving money, because making money is hard. Well, saving money might be easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm part owner of some radio stations. I know making money is really hard. And this is what you and I talked about with OMG. By the way, I love the name OMG. What a great name for a company, Optimized Media Group.
And so this is the engineers, so that you should catch this. So we have the diode.
Let me see. Yeah.
Diode. To a point here. All right.
Yeah.
Resistor. Power.
Yeah.
There we go. So, yeah, we're... you know, flowing energy only in one direction, and we're resistance to power. So
there you go. Resistance to power. Love it. So one of the I'm sure you have a number of examples, but the one I remember particularly that you and I talked about was something that I should have done, and I didn't. I stupidly went out and spent money. Now, we save money over what traditional systems would cost, but I'm talking about a business phone system. So in our radio station in Greenville, Mississippi, I laid out retail price for, I guess, a total of about 15 or maybe 18 Grandstream IP telephones. We paid about $40 a piece for them, and I felt it was a really good deal. We're using a hosted off-site asterisk type of PBX, and happy with what we paid. Our phone service is really cheap. The phones were not expensive, but you said, oh, Kirk, you could have spent less. How's that, Jim? How could I have spent less?
I pinch those pennies until they scream, sir. Yes, we've been paying right around $10 to $15 a phone. Frankly, using Cisco phones is currently what we're doing. Very similar to what you were talking about with an asterisk server, and the difference is we're hosting most of the, with our client stations that are doing this, we're hosting them internally, doing as little outside as we can. There's been a couple of different examples of I guess to the extent to which you want to host things internally, depending on your own infrastructure and stuff. But there are ways of pinching that down, and we have saved stations literally thousands of dollars a month in doing this. And a lot of the stations don't even understand that this is an option, because they just have this ongoing contract with this company that provides their internet service and their phone service, and they're leasing phones and switches and stuff. And they signed a 5-year contract 3 or 4 years ago. And at the time, that might have been an okay deal. But as it sits right now, there's no way that you should be paying $2,000 a month or more for some of these services, where we were able to take that bill from over $2,000 a month and reduce it down to about $150 a month. There was a small outlay of cost to it. You know, we had to buy all new phones. We had to buy the equipment for the asterisk servers and replace some of their switches and some things. But for less than the cost of 1 month's savings, now they have a less expensive way to go forward.
Okay, so you intrigued me with the $10 or $15 Cisco phones. And now, wait a minute. They cost more than that. We're not talking about brand new phones, are we?
No, God, no. Absolutely not. And you know what? As much as much as I like to preach having cutting-edge technology, as I'm literally leaning on my new Axia Fusion board over here, but as much as I'd like to talk about cutting-edge technologies, there's places where, you know, you don't need to have that much power. You don't need to have that much technology. A lot of the stuff that we're using is very capable and is 7 or 8 years old. And, yeah, you know, we buy them in lots of hundreds and only have to pay, you know, $10, $15 a phone and go from there. I mean, there's very inexpensive ways of doing it. You have to understand how much technology you need. Overbuying technology is just going to cost you money. I'll see if I can get the camera to catch this. Yes. All right. So I'm pointing at these computers right here.
Yeah.
These are tiny little Zotac computers. There's four computers that are in a one rack shelf sitting right here. That is all of the computers that are running my Air Studio right now. There's four of them. They're all about the size of a cell phone. So this I'm they're powerful. I'm recording our stuff on Adobe Audition right here. So I'm doing audio production work with these machines as well. These are not slouch machines. They cost $180 a piece, I think, something like that. There's no need to put in these, server-sized machines to do a basic task like this. My phone's call center program is running on one. I have my Associated Press Newswire is running in here on one of these things. And some of these facilities, each one of those would have been a $800 to $2,000 machine. There's no need for that. So you can do a lot if you understand exactly how much power you really need to have, and ultimately save yourself some money in doing so.
We've got to put a few computer names in the show notes, Jim. So maybe after the show, we can get together on a couple of notes so I can inform our listeners and viewers about some of the products that you're talking about. So back to the phones. You got $10-$15 Cisco phones, a few years old. I guess they're refurbed, cleaned up, or are you cleaning them up yourself?
Yeah, it depends on I've seen both of those scenarios. Okay. Yes, sometimes they come in pretty good condition, sometimes not so much, and sometimes they take a little time to. It's not so much the cleaning, but it's the parts. Sometimes we missing handsets and stuff like that, but minor issues.
Yeah.
You know, we fire them up, make sure that the screens are still active and all the buttons still work and all the lights still blink. And in fact, there is the Cisco software that you can diagnostic software that basically. We'll do a functional test on all the phones and we run that. So
it sounds like a guy like me, and I'm just going to use me as an example here. And hey, other listeners, you can draw your own conclusions. But instead of me spending $800 to $900 on physical phones to re-outfit our studios, sales offices, admin offices in Greenville, Mississippi, I could have spent $200 and outfitted with some used but perfectly good Cisco IP phones that would still work fine with the hosted Asterisk IP service that I chose.
Yes. Yes, you can. There are a few issues with, I will tell you, like, for example, the old Cisco IP phones. Some of them have some older firmware that limits what you can do as far as which versions of Asterisk that you can run. And if you know what you're getting into when you're doing this, that's great. That's where finding somebody like myself to help walk you through that might be wise.
Yeah.
Because you can accidentally spend money on things that are completely incompatible and just won't work.
Sure. So. And of course, if you buy in bulk, that's great. I bought two of the Grandstream phones that I bought, tried them out, made sure I understood how they work, and then I said, okay, these work fine. Let's order 16 more of these, and we'll outfit the whole place.
And
so,
we've used those same Grandstream phones in certain scenarios. We've also, I think Ubiquiti also has some phones that are very similar to the Grandstream phones that work real well. They're a little bit more expensive, but a little bit more feature rich, we'll say. But there's even that though, Kirk, even that is so much better than having a lease where you're paying. Sometimes, $10 to $50 a month per seat, per phone, forever. So the idea of just let's keep business going the way it has been, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Well, I know, Chris Tobin, you're a real proponent of staying away from this kind of lock-in. And, of course, the reason for decades we had lock-in was you used to have to get your phones from Ma Bell, the phone company, and then we had different proprietary systems that if you had a phone made by Panasonic, or if you had a phone system made by Panasonic, you had to use Panasonic phones. You pretty well had to get them from the Panasonic phone dealer. You had to have them come and program the thing because only they knew how to do it. Chris, we're just about away from that kind of lock-in, aren't we?
Oh, we're definitely away from it. I mean, there's always a few holdouts. I mean, if you still want to program that Merlin or the System 85, I've done those. And let me say this, I'm very grateful I don't have to do it anymore. No, I'm quite a proponent of not being locked in. The technology, as Jim points out, has definitely made it very easy to find a solution that makes sense. This here is an iPhone. You're familiar with that, right? There's the logo. On this phone, I have a VoIP app, a soft phone, if you will, application. And my buddy's engineering office, when he calls me from the extension he gave me at his office, it rings here. I can then call up the app and call back to him on his extension from here. Yeah. So there's two things you take advantage of. One is your data, your cellular data, if you're not near a Wi-Fi access point. But if I'm near a Wi-Fi access point, the Wi-Fi now carries my voice call, and I'm still in touch. So I could be anywhere on the globe, so to speak, with connectivity and communicate with the engineering office and be like, okay, where are you? Oh, I'm in Singapore right now. Oh, how nice. And to them, it's a local call. Well, not even. It's just a connection.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I did that the other day with a friend of mine. We were doing some work, and I called him, and he says, how did you get a connection? There's no access on the rooftop where you are with the cellular. I said, no, but there's a Cisco switch here. I plugged in my that Wi-Fi thing. It got an IP address, and I got some internet broadband, and I made it happen. So now I'm talking to you on the Wi-Fi. And it was just, like, it blew his mind. You know, he's been doing this for 60 years. So he's like, yeah, but I remember the old sets. Yeah, the 1A2s. I know. But, well, the candlestick phones for a certain period of time. So, yeah, don't get locked in. And don't let any sales rep bamboozle you with this, that, and the other. Because I was just talking with someone today who was looking at some wireless stuff, and they were being told all these wonderful things about what they should do, where they should go, and which model, and why this model is better than the other, the data rate you can get. I look up the product. I'm like, wait a minute. This is no different than three other products I've used. It was just a sales pitch.
If you are locked into a contract, don't be afraid to look into what it takes to get out. We had a client that had, they were, I want to say it was 3 years into a 5-year contract. I looked into the details of it, and it was going to cost them nearly $8,000 to get out because essentially they had to repay their package discount for the previous 3 years, plus a small disconnect fee and some things like that. But it was going to be $8,000 to get out of it, which sounded crazy until they realized that they were saving about $1,500 a month. So after 3 or 4 months, you're positive dollars. So get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Jim, you mentioned earlier, and something that we've hit upon on this show, and I've done a few videos about this subject, and that is the return on investment from getting away from traditional phone lines, especially POTS, but also ISDN. You know, maybe PRI you can get competitively, but moving over to VoIP SIP, and I know stations here in Nashville that are right now, they're scrambling to get themselves aligned to move over to VoIP SIP so they can quit paying the ridiculous rates they're paying. Stations are now paying, in some places, $500 a month for an ISDN line that was costing them $60 or $70 a month, and they're just pulling their hair out. They're real quick looking to move to IP. Jim, tell me what's been your personal experience. What have you saved for a station or a client by moving them over to newer technology?
ISDN, man. ISDN, it needs to die. it's okay. ISDN was so rock solid, and I understand why people are hanging on to it because it's just there and it just works. But at the same time, can you really validate having that? You know, you mentioned $500-$600 a month for a line for a, you know, that goes to a certain site that you may do 3 or 4 things a year at. Maybe you do 10 or 15 things a year at. But can you really explain why you're going to pay $500 to $800 a month for a line that's not going to give you any better service than having VoIP options, VoIP SIP or when we're talking ISDN, IP codec of some sort to try and get away from it. Getting people off of ISDN is saving money all over the place. And This is not something that you're going to be able to hang on to. ISDN is getting phased out all across the country. There's lots of places where you cannot get a new one installed, and they're starting to sunset some of the existing pieces. So absolutely, getting away from ISDN is big. Getting away from POTS lines, same story. Finding some sort of a SIP provider that's going to be able to provide you a package of lines that is going to work for you. You can port your numbers over there and still keep all of your numbers that have been on your business cards and billboards for years. You know, it can be done, and it can be done relatively easy and relatively inexpensively, and you will save money within the first month or two of doing these things.
Something I want to point out, and experience has taught us that if you're a radio station that has the name's escaping me, the high volume lines.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Tobin helped me out here. High volume phone lines, choke lines, choke circuits. Yeah.
Choke lines.
If you've got choke lines for your call in, we certainly have heard many cases where the incumbent phone company will not let you port those. And maybe they physically can't. We've heard both ways, that they can, they don't want to, they don't have to, legally they don't have to. But anyway, you may not be able to, if you move to SIP, VoIP, you may not be able to keep that that request line phone number at the choke line exchange that you've had for decades. And what we found out was from a radio station in Detroit, they were told they couldn't have those numbers, but they were by golly going to move anyway to SIP VoIP. And in the long run, they found out they could change phone numbers on their request lines, and it didn't matter. The number of phone calls went right back up. What they did do is keep both. They kept the old phone line and had it auto answer. They did bring it in by PRI, and they had it auto answer into an Astra system that said, "Hey, guess what? Our phone number's changed. Please write this phone number down. We'll take your request." Because the phone company wouldn't even provide an intercept for them. This phone number has changed. Wouldn't even do that. So it was really a bad situation with the incumbent phone company, and they found out that they did not lose any volume of calls by switching to new phone numbers for their radio stations, different than the ones they had for decades. And I thought that was, I'm glad it turned out that way. And so if you're afraid to, we can't get it, we've had the same number for 27 years. Well, you know what? The listeners you had 27 years ago are probably not with you anymore. They've moved on to a different format by now.
Right.
So it's much more ephemeral of a thing than maybe you're giving it credit for.
And it's definitely worth it. And, you know, phones are but one kind of area that we've found. That was kind of the low-hanging fruit at a lot of these facilities because, you know, it was an obvious spot there. But really what it comes down to is not just with phones, but with anything. If you take a look at the cost of the operation of whatever this function is, and you consider things, what are the H-hour man hours? What's it going to cost you to operate that? What's the cost of repair and upkeep for that technology? And then compare that to what is it going to cost to change to something new and different. How long is it going to take you to recover that? And is it worth that upfront investment? And that's really where it has has really shown that there's a lot of places that a lot of areas where radio stations are doing business as they have done business for the last 15, 20, 50 years. And there's just better ways of doing this. Phones we've mentioned, something as simple as let's start with your transmitter. How many old transmitters are out there are sucking a whole bunch more power than they need to be?
Yeah.
And you have extra staff, engineering staff that have to be on hand to be able to keep them up and operating. The cost of repair and the likelihood of the next, you know, of another repair coming up. Look at how much this is really costing you to have that existing, and then compare that to how much is it going to cost to replace that transmitter, and what additional things is that going to get you. So, for example, we had a group that we work with that replaced an old Harris MW10 transmitter with a new Nautel XR12, and it took them about 13 months to pay for the transmitter. So in 13 months, in power consumption alone, they paid for the transmitter. And oh, by the way, those 13 months were problem-free, and they didn't have to, you know, they weren't off the air. They weren't dealing with these other issues and having to run make-good spots all the time because of all the problems. And, you know, their pattern was consistent, and they had, they, you know, they had listeners where they weren't there before because they had a more consistent machine in there, and it took them 13 months to pay for it. But now they're in the what I'll call profit. They're not spending that money. Yeah. You know, we replaced their Harris FM25K with a Nautel GV20. Again, more efficient. Took them a little bit longer in that case. And they're still in the payoff phase of that one. But, you know, there's these efficiencies that on paper it says, you want me to spend $100,000 today? Well, yeah, I do. I do because if, you know, 2-3 years from now, you're going to be making money on this. Just assuming nothing changes. You're going to be making money on this. So the ways that things can go wrong here are broad. I mean, technology is one thing. Another good example, we had a group of stations. I was considering buying another group of stations, and we were called in to kind of analyze how much is this going to cost us for technology, and can we operate out of the same space. And I overheard as part of the conversation, well, you know what, we're going to have you know, we bring in this this extra group of stations, and it was only adding two stations. They're like, well, we're going to have to hire another traffic person. And I looked at them like, wait a minute, you're only operating a couple stations now. Why do you need to have more staff to operate your traffic system when you bring in more stations? And they're like, well, they're occupying their entire time with how they're doing this right now. And I went and I looked at their traffic system. They were running a DOS-based DARTS system for traffic. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, there's your problem. You're going to, you know, the cost of bringing in another person is going to be $30,000, $40,000 a year. Well, you know what? For, you know, less than half of that, let's move you up to a more modern system like a radio traffic, Scott traffic or Marketron or something. I mean, even wide orbit or something like that, that's going to be so much more efficient that you're going to be able to run everything with your existing staff. Things like that didn't cross their mind because they're saying we're going to add on to our existing system. No. Find that efficiency. Find a way of making that a better transition and save yourself some money in the long run.
This is a great reason to belong to groups of other broadcasters where you as either engineering managers, VPs of engineering, or as general managers or station owners, where you can talk with other station owners or other counterparts and see what they're doing. My own radio station business partner, Larry Fuss, he's a member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank, and they meet twice a year. And you better believe they're talking about ideas on how to save money. And you know, we've had a lot of good ideas and implemented some of them on how to save money on whether it's, you know, voice talent, sharing different people around, doing exchanges, or as you said, with software. Chris Tobin and is our co-host with us. Also, Jim Gray is our guest. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. And we're going to be talking about, after the break here, how a botnet used a piece of broadcast gear to cause some trouble. And also, we have some interesting government procurement stories and helicopter stories all coming up with Jim Gray. I'm Kirk Harnack on This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, this part of our show is brought to you by my friends at Broadcast Supply Worldwide. It's still microphone mania here in March, but you've only got another, day and a few hours? You've got today and tomorrow to take advantage of it. And here's what's going on. Right now, you can save up to 61% off select microphones and mic bundles. Now, there's some packages with the famous RE20 mics, the RE320 and the RE27ND, some of those popular microphones ever for broadcast. And they're having some package discounts right now where you get an RE pop filter, of course, the microphone, the 309A shock mount, and the BSW XLR cable. You get these packages way below normal price, and I got to tell you, they're not going to be able to offer these prices again. Basically, as of tomorrow, this pricing goes away. And as far as they know, they can never offer prices like that ever again. So check that out at bswusa.com. And look for the microphone bundles from Electric Voice. They have other mics, too, like get 10% off the Yellowtech IXM Pro mic bundle. Use the promo code YELLOW in all caps when you check out for that Yellowtech IXM. That's a cool microphone. Also, the Audio-Technica BP40 broadcast mic package, that's $349, includes the mic, the windscreen, the shock mount, and XLR cable. Now, here's one of my favorites, the Heil PR40. That's on sale, $349, includes the mic, the windscreen, and the RE pop filter, the HB1 boom arm, and the XLR cable. You get all that for $349. Now, what about mic processing? Well, my favorite for the money is the DBX 286S. That's a mic processor. Use promo code 286S and get an extra $30 off of that, off their usual low price at BSWUSA.com. Now, here's what's cool. BSW can ship later than anyone, up to 7 p.m. Eastern time for any item that's in stock in their Ohio warehouse, and that's where most everything is for them. They are close to the airport near Columbus, Ohio, and so they can ship out of there even as late as like 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, you place your order by 7 p.m., and it's on a plane that night. If you want, you know, overnight or two-day delivery, whatever you want, they can deliver to you quickly. Been in business since 1973. They are ready to take your phone calls anytime between 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time, and that's 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. on the West Coast. You figure what it is for you. Just lots of good deals. Mic Mania is what they got going on now, and you definitely want to get the, if you want an EV mic, get that today or tomorrow. Don't put it off any longer because you absolutely will pay more money after tomorrow for that. Thanks a lot to Broadcast Supply Worldwide, BSW, at BSWUSA.com for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And speaking of microphones, a real mic expert. We've had Bob Heil on, but another mic expert, a guy that talks into these things all the time, is going to be our guest coming up in May, Joe Cipriano. He's famous, been on Kiss FM in Los Angeles and all kinds of television stuff, and he's been the announcer voice for the Grammy Awards and on and on and on. Joe Sip is going to be our guest the second show in May, and he'll be talking not about announcing. That's not what we talk about here. He's going to be talking about microphones and detailing all of his favorite microphones that he's used over the years. So it's going to be a great show coming up. All right. Jim Gray is here. Chris Tobin is our co-host. He's here as well. Jim, let's jump right back into some stories. We were talking earlier about a botnet. And we've heard about this Internet of Things and, you know, how light bulbs in your house can actually become part of a botnet. And, hey, homeowners and business owners and radio station engineers are going to have to figure out how to separate IoT devices, especially, you know, the cheap consumer devices. And they're also going to have to figure out how to watch out for any problems with their appliances to see if anybody has done something to them. Why don't you talk to us about what you know about this subject and maybe how it relates to a botnet issue you had there at St. Cloud State?
Sure. We're part of the Minnesota State University system here. And as such, there's some pretty impressive security and firewall systems that they have in place here. And I will tell you that we have been very much on the radar of the state IT people, the MNIT people, because, quite frankly, a lot of the broadcast gear is not as secured as it should be. And it's coming right from the manufacturer with some pretty open doors. And it's, they have a little security spider on campus that sits here and probes ports. And I get a report every day of all the laws that I've broken and the campus rules and which of my machines are on the naughty list. And they watch us pretty closely because the broadcast industry has not been doing real well about securing their gear. And there's been a couple of incidences that I've been involved in from here. We had a incident about a year ago. Our PRSS satellite receiver, it's a 4104, I think it's the current model, was causing some problems. And what had happened was, because my network here is on a same, is really on the same, piece of the university as the rest of the dorms on campus. Mm-hmm. And, somebody had been playing on the Sony PlayStation network, and something had gotten in through that system onto their machine turned it into a bit of a zombie that found one of our open machines, and it infected my PRSS satellite receiver and turned it into a machine that was generating a DNS attack on the Sony PlayStation network.
Wow. And you told me that the PRSS satellite receiver runs Linux as its OS, but probably the infection came from a non-Linux machine somewhere else, maybe a Windows machine.
It was likely a Windows machine, likely in one of the dorms. A section of our network called ResNet, the residence halls. It came in from ResNet onto my machine, infected that machine, and then used it as the center of this DOS attack on the PlayStation network. And it was shocking to say, because there's nothing in that case. There was nothing that I could do in this. This is a piece of hardware that I get from PRSS to install and plug in and walk away from, essentially. So I really had no way of better securing that in my case. And we've had long conversations with the folks there about that. What we've done since is we've tried to protect ourselves from outside attacks from within the university better, and then also protect the university from me, quite frankly. So we had to redo our system such that we're both better protected and both safer because of that. But again, this is another sign of the broadcast gear that's out there. You can't assume that you can just plug it onto the network and run. You have to try and find a way of securing that down, whether it's changing some of the basic passwords or putting it behind a firewall or VPNing or something. That you have to be a little bit more proactive than just here's my new device and I can access it over the network to do all the setup, so I'll just plug it into my network and then I can tap it from my office. That's great, but you have to go the next step further and said, how can I protect this machine from getting destroyed, and then how can I make sure that machine isn't creating more problems like it did in this case?
One of the common errors that that people make, And Chris Tobin may want to butt in on this too. And I've made the mistake here myself at my office. Luckily, I haven't made it at a client location. But if you have an audio over IP network, then you've got a bunch of specialized devices that the best practice is give them their own network. So I'm speaking about Livewire from Axia or Wheatnet or Ravenna, any of these. And as far as I know, all of these, they have to use clock. And if it's a broadcast clock, then whichever device is acting as the clock device in an Axia network, it could be any device could be clock if you let them default. And you don't want those packets, and you don't want multicast packets to spread into networks that can't handle it. That's why, and I assume others do too, but that's why Livewire, you need to use switches that are specified and that they're also configured as specified so that problems aren't caused. And so if you take an Axia X node and plug that into a home or a business network that's not prepared to deal with what that thing can do, you may find your Wi-Fi doesn't work, not because the Wi-Fi is broken, but because there's floods of packets coming into the network. And that's why you've got to do this correctly. Now, I'm talking here about, of course, expected and proper operation from these devices. You don't want to plug an audio over IP device into an ordinary business network that's not expecting the various multicast packets that are going to be there. But you also have to watch out for the IoT devices that could either arrive infected. I'm talking cheap security cams and baby monitors and things like that, what we've heard horror stories about. Or they can be infected by malware, like you said, or they have an easy-to-guess password and they're easily identifiable, and you can go to a website that we've talked about here and find them all exposed on the internet and try the default password. And by golly, I've even gotten into some of those, just to look, take a picture and said, see, I was in. So I'm really kind of talking about several different scenarios here. And Jim, I didn't mean to talk on and on and steal any of your thunder, but it does sound like your IT department, maybe did they end up segmenting networks? I mean, I don't understand why people in the dorm need to be able to have any access to a satellite receiver in your radio station.
The issue has always been that the university is highly protected from the outside.
Yeah.
But from inside, it was not. So there was some things that were just VLAN and said that was good enough. And that was the case where the ResNet system, the residence halls, were VLAN on their own, but they still had full access. If you could get the IP, you could, you could probe and find these things, find open ports and whatnot. But there was no internal level of firewall security. And I think that's really where the problem, I'll say, started in that case. Mm-hmm. It came in from within our university, and we were not protected from that. So once we got once something hopped in, it was free to roam. So that's now changed. So now we're doing a lot better with that.
Cool. Chris Tobin, you have a comment on this Internet of Things?
It's an inside job. Always is the one that takes the cake. No. Well, you know, what? You know, it's interesting what he points out, and it's true. I was just working the other night with a friend at a facility, transmitter facility, and we got called in, wreaking all kinds of havoc, wreaking on the network. The guy goes, "I can't reach my transmitters. We team viewer in, and the computer doesn't do this. It doesn't do that." And it's like, all right, let me get up to the site and see what's going on. Talk about confusion. Three cable modems, two different routers, each plugged into each other, and then an Ethernet switch that was being used to feed something else, and no protection whatsoever, and all default passwords on the equipment. And it just turned out that they were getting slammed by, you know, port scanning, and the devices they're trying to reach just gave up the ghost. The ports just locked up. So, you know, you have to really think about this. You know, broadcast engineers need to really think hard and long about how to protect your facility. Firewall, imperative. Internal intrusion detection software, imperative. And then segmenting your LANs accordingly, VLANs, if you want to call it that, or you should call it that. And then properly, as Jim pointed out, inside and out. Because you never know who's going to walk into your facility with an infected device, plug into your network or your guest network, and all of a sudden they're running rampant. So you got to think of all these things. It's a whole new world. It's not like the old days of token ring, and if you didn't have a bi-pin end connector for your coax connection to the computer network, then you didn't have to yeah. anybody getting in.
That's right.
Nowadays, yeah. RJ45 appears on everything. Your dishwasher, yeah. refrigerator, you know, it's like, you know what, I don't need to see what's inside my fridge if it's going to cost me my credit card, you know, it's like, that's okay, I'll deal with the empty fridge, I know what it looks like, you know, it's just, you know, you got to take things more seriously, inside and out, and unfortunately, and I've said this before, a lot of the IT world, we'll call it that, the discipline is very different than what we're accustomed to in broadcast engineering. You know, Jim knows as well that, you know, if you're going to do transmitter maintenance, there's a certain step-by-step procedure you follow when you arrive at the site and there's trouble or no trouble, you're doing preventive maintenance. Do you just restart the transmitter when you get there? You know, just for the hell of it, just to make sure it's okay? No. But if you're an IT person, you walk into a place, nine times out of ten, the solution is, oh, reboot the computer or the server. Really? Is that the norm? That's dangerous. And that's the difference. Why don't you restart the transmitter when you just walk in at midnight just for the hell of it? You're disrupting the operation. You shouldn't have
yeah,
to.
Yeah.
Same thing
yeah.
with a server. Same thing with a computer. If the computer fails, don't just restart it. Look at it. There are error logs. There's logs in the computer. Look at them. Know where to find them. I've done it a dozen times and found a lot of crazy little things in those logs that said, oh, that's the problem. And I was actually able to recreate some of the issues because the log entry said what the error was and which application was causing it. I'm like, oh, look at that. I had a guy, what was it, last year, every time you open up this one PDF, the computer would go bonkers. Turns out the PDF had some kind of a Trojan attached to it, but only all it did was just restart the machine. And I found it by accident going through the logs. I'm like, what is this entry? And the entry said, "Did you find me yet? .pdf." And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what? I was like, what the devil? So I took the hard drive out, ran it as a regular drive, scanned it, was able to find a few things, found that file, grabbed it, took it off the machine, worked fine ever since.
Wow.
But I found it by going through the system logs. I said, oh, this is a good one. Yeah. So you got to think about these things.
Hey, Jim, in just a couple minutes, we're going to have a commercial, and then I want to hear a quick procurement or helicopter story. I want to relate something that happened at one of my stations this past week that caused a lot of havoc. Hey, engineers, listeners, you can probably identify with this or watch out for it yourself. We don't know what precipitated the problem. We have one of our stations that I've not had the time to fix up the network. It's still in the horrible shape it was at when we bought the radio stations. And so it's a hodgepodge, and part of it I can't move until we get off an old automation system and go to a newer one, because the old automation system is hard-coded with some IP addresses that it'd be a nightmare to move. So I got to deal with it the way it is right now. Well, the internet went out for a while, and then it went off a lot, and it looked like the DSL was working poorly, and my really good MikroTik router was extremely unhappy, and AT&T finally came out and they said, there's really nothing wrong with your DSL. Well, we have nobody technical at the station to do this. Bottom line was this: some switch on the network, and this is one of those networks where, divides it at one cheap switch and goes to two other cheap switches, then one of those goes to another cheap switch, and all that's going to come out. And I know it's a problem, and we've got good switches to replace them, but here's what happened. A wall wart died. And somebody had I don't know how it all happened, but the bottom line was this: when somebody somewhat technical replaced the wall wart and that switch came alive again, what was it? And there was another switch there's another cable on a switch that was okay. Bottom line was this: I'm sorry, I'm all over the place here because we really haven't figured it out. There was a cable that both ends of it were plugged into the same switch. And maybe some switches that doesn't cause a problem, but it sure was causing a problem here. And unplugging one end of that switch made the router four rooms away much happier. And everything came back alive and it was all okay. Now, what precipitated the problem, we really don't know. I really haven't been able to reestablish a chain of events. But at some point, something failed. Somebody plugged something into something, and then it looked like the DSL was down because it was horrible, horrible ping times. It was horrible ping times. We were pinging the router. And the router was too busy cycling the same packets all around and around, apparently. So look out for dumb stuff like that. And hey, don't do what Kirk does. Put a little more effort into reconfiguring your network so that you know how it's laid out. And it's laid out in a way that makes sense. And do more home runs. And don't string one switch after another, after another, after another, like it's done there right now. I've eliminated that at my other stations, but I got one station left to do, and it's that one. And Jim, do you have anything to say about my episode?
I wish that I could say that I haven't seen that happen, but absolutely. You have cables left in place because a piece died, so you rerouted something else, and then all of a sudden you decide to re-fire up something that's back, and you create a switch loop. And it happens. It happens.
Well, you made me feel a bit better. Hey, we're just about out of time, and we had a little technical issue at the beginning of the show, so we still have to stop at the same time. Both Jim Gray and Chris Tobin will have tips of the week for us, and I can hardly wait for Jim's. Either a tip or a little story about, exciting stuff coming up. Our show this week at Radio Tech is brought to you in part by the folks at Lavo. Now, you know that I'm a broadcast engineer, do on-air stuff, the host of this show, but you may not know that I've traveled around the world internationally and seen a lot of broadcast facilities. Some of the more interesting ones were in countries where English was not the first language. I was in one country where they had studio after studio after studio of languages that were totally foreign to me. And honestly, I'd been on this trip for almost 3 weeks, and my brain was starting to hurt in terms of talking to broadcasters who did speak English as their first language. And I ran across one studio where it was some folks from Australia. And even though they had a really thick Aussie accent, they were speaking English. And it's like my brain went, I can talk to these people without thinking too hard. And it was just amazing. All the broadcast studios, one after another, and all these different formats going on. And then you travel to other places in the world where there's, they're broadcasting out of a hut. And using what equipment they can get hold of. And the antenna is, on top of a tree. Swaying in the breeze. So I've seen stuff everywhere. But what I'm finding out more and more is that people around the world are looking at Lavo audio consoles. Lavo, L-A-W-O. Now, Lavo's famous around the world already for television, audio, and video, especially for those high-profile events like the Olympics, for World Cup soccer, even the Grammy Awards. So when it's a mission-critical broadcast, a big live event, you're very likely to find a big Lavo console there. It's built redundantly. Everything's over-engineered, and you know, even the backups have backups, because there's no do-overs in live event broadcasting. Well, you may be thinking, why should I care? I'm not doing TV. You know, radio guys like us, though, hate dead air even more than TV guys. And that's why broadcasters like the BBC, NPR, and CBC in Canada, to name a few, are buying Lavo radio consoles. Now, since Lavo's this involved in radio and TV around the world, Lavo's thinking a lot about the future. And everybody knows that all types of media are converging on a common IP delivery platform, just what we've been talking about on the show. Lavo's ready for that with broadcast gear that handles audio, video, and control of every studio device using a single integrated off-the-shelf computer network. And what's coming next? Well, there's virtualization, broadcasting from the cloud, controlling things. It looks like you're doing something local, but really it's off somewhere else. So if absolute bulletproof reliability, that five nines of uptime, and being future-proof are important to you, well, check out Lavo, L-A-W-O. Here's the website, and give us a little bit of credit here on Twirt. Go to lavo.com/twirt. That's lavo.com/twirt, and we'll get a little recognition for that. And you'll find out about Lavo audio consoles. Thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. This AOIP is just everywhere. All right, Jim Graham, I'm going to give you a crack at it first. You got a little story that might interest us. It's kind of broadcast related.
Well, I'll try and get this one out as quick as I can. You asked me how did I get into this idea of operational efficiency. It's because I was once part of something that was the exact opposite of that, and that was government procurement, specifically around the UH-1 Huey helicopter. There was a time when I was the largest UH-1 Huey dealer in the country, dealing with military surplus. And there was times, of course, you know, after the first Gulf War where they were selling stuff, and then they were buying stuff back up when they were trying to build up for other purposes. And quite often, you know, I would buy something from the government in a surplus auction for 5 or 6 cents, hold on to it for about 3 years till they realized they needed it back and sell it back to them for $2,000. Then the cycle would continue. There was one example that I had of a bearing that goes into the transmission of a UH-1 Huey that if it has a certain number, it's called a cage code on it. It tells you it was manufactured by Bell Helicopters. It's worth more and has a longer shelf life and useful life and things like that. Well, there was an example where I needed that piece, and the government wanted more of them, and I, through a bunch of research, to make the long story short, found out that this was also used in Allison transmissions for the Chevy pickups. Same manufacturer, I think it was a Timken bearing, and found out that I could go down to my local Napa Auto Parts and for $180 buy that same piece that had the same cage code and sell that back to the government for about $4,000. I was buying them at Napa and turning them around to the government. But at the same time, I was doing this by a bid because there was other people that knew how to do that exact same thing. So there was so much inefficiency in how parts are sold from the government, and then also how pieces are purchased for the government. And man, you know, government aid programs that we were involved in, the inefficiency of that system was just crazy. So my suggestion, you wanted my tip of the week, man, find a way of saving money, and you'll find that it's easier than making money. One of the things that you can do with that, NAB is coming up. Going to these conferences, specifically around NAB, is going to be so useful for you to find out how things are done now, how things are more efficient today. You'll be able to see and touch gear that might be able to make a change, or just a process or a software or something like that. Go there, go see those things. And I'll add a small plug for two things that I'm involved in. I'm on the board of directors for the Association of Public Radio Engineers. We put on our Public Radio Engineers Conference. I'll be presenting there on finding the next generation of engineers and where we're finding them from, which is related to the other presentation that I'm also doing at BEA, Broadcast Education Association, where I'll be presenting on being innovative inside of a radio program like what we have here at St. Cloud State University. So we're not just a consumer, but we're actually an innovator. We're finding ways of doing things in a new way and bringing that back to the industry, bringing it back to manufacturers, companies that we work with, like the TELUS Alliance folks and many others. So those are some things that can really help help you save money easier than making it.
Cool. Good deal. I look forward to seeing you at the Public Radio Engineering Conference just before the NAB starts.
Yes.
All right. Chris Tobin, you got a tip of the week for us, buddy?
Well, real simple, since we were talking about botnets and VLANs and all kinds of IT-related stuff, Wi-Fi access points.
Yeah.
Go for your facility. Do a Wi-Fi scanner application either on your phone or your laptop and check to make sure that your Wi-Fi access points are properly configured. I say this because I visited a place recently, broadcast facility, and I just did my usual let's see what's out there type of thing. Came across a couple of wireless connections. I used the default, so to speak, password, logins, a combination thereof, and accessed 2 out of 4. And I was like, wow, I'm just sitting in their facility. So as we just spoke about earlier, you know, getting an attack from within, I was able to access 2 locations, 2 access points, which then when I was in, discovered that their network was wide open. I was actually connecting to servers across the country. I'm sitting there going, you know, my buddy comes to sit down with me. He goes, so here's the project we're working on. What do you think? I said, before we go anywhere, can you tell me what this server ID is and this? I wrote them on a piece of paper. He goes, oh, that's the – where did you get that information? I spun my laptop around. I said, well, is this the server I'm looking at? He's like, what? How did – he goes, don't even add. Don't tell me. So the tip is anything wireless means it doesn't stay within your spot. It goes everywhere. Remember, RF travels. You may not know where it travels before. Somebody has a very large ear, an antenna, and can listen in on what you're doing by across the street and pointing it at your building. So my tip is check on your network, the wireless network side of things, because nowadays everything is so based on convenience that I'm sure – and Jim probably has several at his facility. You have access points that are all over the place that just make it easy for people to do things. But you got to remember, there are those out there who might want to do it to you.
Good advice. Oh, passwords and we're going to be talking more and more about this as time goes on, I'm sure. And you might want to get yourself involved in other, you know, security type of podcasts, because it's important for us engineers to know about that. We got to go. Jim Gray, thank you so much for being on. I hope to interview you again, maybe at PREC. I'll get to see you there, huh?
Absolutely. I'd be more than willing.
All right. And Chris Tobin, thanks for joining us from the rooftop. Good to see you.
Absolutely. It's a nice call.
I want to thank Suncast for producing today's show, and we got to go. Thanks to Andrew Zarian and all of our sponsors. Please visit them, the TELUS Alliance, bswusa.com, and lavo.com/twert. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.